Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well as we are one day closer to Auburn football. We've got SEC football on tap tonight. There is a couple of games involving SEC teams tonight. As a matter of fact, involving teams that are on Auburn's schedule. So we'll look at that. It's going to be a fun Thursday show. It's Bill and Dan, as usual, here in the studio. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer is in studio as well. Ferg, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How are y'all?
Oh, man. I'm ready. I'm ready to be there and see some college football. See it up close and personal. Of course, it's week two of high school football as both Auburn High and Lee Scott looking to go 2-0. And we've got a fun Thursday show for you. I mentioned the three of us here. Got Drew at the controls. Hour number two going to be, just absolutely slammed as we have our old friend David Pascal joining us from Chattanooga. He's still, of course, with the Chattanooga Times Free Press, but he is now doing sports talk on WGOW in Chattanooga as the station where
the
he
GAU,
was.
The GAU, as they call it.
I guess.
I don't know if that's
true. We GAU. I don't know. We'll ask him that when we get him on a little after 5 today.
The GAU.
But the station that he was working at has new management, and I'm not sure if they're running something against David, but David he said he hit the transfer portal and has moved across town. So we'll have him on at 5:05. And then at 5:30, the first edition of Tiger Takes for the season. Tiger Takes back once again with Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. So that's all coming up on the show. So your best opportunity early on, at least, we'll probably have a brief window between David Pascal and Tiger Takes and then another window after Eugene. But we'd love for you to join in with any of your thoughts, questions, comments by calling us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. Big shout out to everybody at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, an Alabama-based firm hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. 334-209-6355 to learn more.
All right, so yes, as we're getting underway here, I would guess that, as Coach Dye used to say, the hay's in the barn, and Auburn should be ready. I've been asked this.
I would think that Auburn's, well, actually, with Alabama A&M, if an opponent were coming from further away, you'd think maybe Thursday is going to be travel day for somebody, across the country. Cal might leave Thursday right. for a game like this, maybe even earlier than that. Alabama A&M,
I would figure, they'll drive down tomorrow from Huntsville, spend the night wherever they're going to be.
They'll drive down from Normal, Phil. Keep in mind,
that's true.
Alabama A&M, coming from Normal, Alabama.
You know, it's funny. I'd never thought about this, but I wonder. It's the former all black high school in Brookton, Alabama.
Is that right?
Was Southern Normal.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I believe so, and I don't know the exact origins. I believe Normal colleges used to be what they called teaching, like teachers' colleges. I believe that's their
okay.
And so
I believe it
started as a teachers' college and has grown into agricultural and manufacturing and other things and as well. And so it's now it's got a lot of different majors to offer. But yeah, Alabama A&M, an opponent coming in from, and I know you've been outspoken about this, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, but yep. to have if you're going to play these FCS games, these paycheck games,
yep.
it's a, and maybe more than a gesture, but it's certainely a nice gesture to keep them in state.
Absolutely. And keep welcome the money in state.
Yeah, and we're going to see Auburn next year or in 2 years play South Alabama. I would love, I mean, again, if you're going to play these group of five games, try to keep it as close to home as possible, especially these public schools like you. You have a connection to them, and might as well go out there and do it. So Auburn's going to play North Alabama in a few years.
Yeah,
that kind of completes the set of FCS programs. By the way, Alabama has not played a non-conference opponent from inside the state of Alabama since the 50s. And Auburn has had like 12 in the last 15 years or something like that.
I understand the lack of appetite from either school in the SEC to play Troy.
Sure.
You know, it's not really a game where you gain a ton by winning.
Yeah.
And
there's a reason why they haven't played UAB in a while as well. But, you know, they're going to play South, though. So
the men's and women's basketball schools in the state have, I think, shown a intense willingness to play other schools in the, you know, Auburn's. I think you asked the trivia question, right? Auburn has played under Pearl. Auburn has played every D1 school in Alabama except Samford.
Yep.
Is that right? Like every D1 school except Samford has had a chance against Auburn, which is a really cool thing. You know, when you think about
so much
filling out a schedule,
so much of these programs' budgets come down to the fact that they need to play these games, and so why not, you know, extend a helping hand to somebody like you, a public school in the state of Alabama. I know they've played Samford in the past as well, but you know, I think it's just an easy call there. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
When was Alabama A&M's last game against Auburn? Was it end of I want to say Jeremy Johnson played in the game.
Yes.
End of 16 maybe. The game after
15 or 16.
I want to say it was after the Georgia loss in 16. Maybe that was the game between.
That might be right.
That game that might have
been. And they've played Alabama State a couple times since then as well.
I could look it up on the notes. I was going off the top of my head there too. But if so, that's, you know, that's about 10 years ago almost. And
yeah, they played Alabama A&M on November 19th, 2016. 55-0.
So that was a game where Auburn wins handily in the
yeah
the
game Auburn between. Auburn has played four games against current SWAC teams, which is Alabama A&M and Alabama State. The average score of those games is 56-4. So.
It's a little different. I picked 50 something to single digits, I believe.
Auburn had a crazy record if you think about like the cumulative
58-4.
The cumulative score of Auburn against the FCS in the last 10 years or so.
Oh, yeah. And that, you've only had two real scares.
I was going to say, and that's considering that there was a game that went to overtime,
double overtime,
and the Mercer game that came down to, it was a 7-point game in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's like the thought that despite those two, you've still beaten the other teams so convincingly that the margins look like that.
I wrote this for the mailbag tomorrow, but Alabama A&M lost to Vandy last season by 34, lost to UAB by 59 2 years ago, lost by 56 to Cincinnati. Like, this is, you know, this is a team towards the bottom of the FCS. This is a team that had a losing record in FCS last year. On paper, it's one of the least talented teams that Auburn has played in a while. So this is going to be even more so than what we've seen in the past from Auburn in these openers. It'll be a lot about, hey, this is about us. This is about playing a clean game of football, because what you're going to get on the other side probably isn't going to be a ton of resistance. Yeah, now, Alabama may be improved.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say, I have said as we were talking and we were looking at the roster with Andy Burcham and Jason Caldwell the last couple of days, they have so many transfers, so many first-year transfers that have multiple years of eligibility left. I can see their pitch, and it seems it makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, come in here, you're going to get a lot of playing time, and you may get a chance to play against some bigger programs that might give you a chance.
There's probably not.
Up. So, I mean, you don't know. There may be somebody or a couple of guys at different spots that you go, wow, what's that guy doing on this team? Mm-hmm. But what they're doing is they're getting an opportunity.
SP Plus, which ranks everybody, like all the way down. I think it goes all the way down to NAIA now. SP Plus likes Auburn to win 53-0 in this one. So, I mean, it's just like it, and I'm looking at let's see, there's another game I was keeping an eye on. Houston Christian and SMU is a 50-point spread. Like, so it's like there is some variance there. It's just not a flat 55. But, yeah, this is I think this is going to be a game for Auburn where they'll be able to take care of business early and really work on themselves.
Oh, it would be incredibly distressing, considering who Auburn has left on the schedule. I think a close game or a highly competitive game would leave you.
It wouldn't be the end of the world, but it's not a great sign.
Yeah, no, you don't want to overreact. It doesn't guarantee anything. But I think a close game, a sustained close game against Alabama A&M would raise red flags against how Auburn will fare against teams that are much better on paper than Alabama A&M that are still. I mean, I guess Cal is a much better team on paper than Alabama A&M, and Auburn will turn around and play them a week later. So I think, yeah, like you said, a clean game, avoiding mistakes, doing what you can early to build a lead so you can start to explore your depth and start to evaluate and start to try things out. I mean, I imagine there's an appetite to get Hank Brown some real reps in this game, although every rep that Peyton Thorne gets matters a ton too, because you want him to continue building rapport and chemistry with his new teammates.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you do. I mean, you'd love to have an opportunity for every single player to get to play. I was on with Ben this morning on Auburn Open Like It This Morning, and he said he wants to see Walker White play in the fourth quarter. And I went, that would really be hard for me to imagine Walker playing the fourth quarter. What has gotten you there? Does that mean you played so well, or has somebody gotten hurt?
Yeah, that's where, and I'm not going to single out any one player and say don't play him. If Hank's your backup, I would
like to see Hank for a quarter
plus. I was going to say, if Hank's your backup, I think the moment you pull Peyton, it should be the Hank show for the rest of the game. And maybe that's unless
the game just is. I mean, unless he comes in and it's like, you know, three series, three touchdowns, and you're up 60.
Then you might
move on.
You're a heartbeat away from him being your quarterback this season. So I think you probably need him to be as experienced and as ready as possible for, you know, in the event that that happens. I'm not saying don't play Holden or don't play Walker, but I also think that there's a real, I think there's a clear reason for Hugh Freeze to want to get Hank Brown as many reps as possible once the game is in hand, and he can start if he gets to that point with Alabama A&M, and they can start to work down the depth chart.
Yeah, I think you do have a benefit of just letting him have some good drives in place. Now, if you're up by a ton and you're just trying to get to the end of the game, and it's like, hey, you're in the game, and we're just going to hand the ball off. Yeah, you might want to throw somebody else out there.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I had seen this and really hadn't thought about it, but saw a little discussion on it over the last couple of days, is you don't have to be as concerned. I mean, if there's somebody who's dressed out, go ahead and put them out there with the red shirt rule clarification that the NCAA has put out there for this year. A player now can play four regular season games and redshirt. The postseason games don't count. So, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. That would mean if there is a player who plays in four games but has really improved and your team happens to make the playoffs, they could play in as many as seven games and still be redshirted.
Although one would think that a player who can help your team win in this era of college football probably isn't getting a redshirt slapped on.
Probably not, but it might be a situation if you had a quarterback. I mean,
how about this? Injured player coming back would be in that situation. Like maybe in a previous era you might have said, well, let's hold off on bringing this guy back at all because we're going to use the redshirt on him. But if he's somebody that maybe started the year on your team, gets hurt, he's back in time for the postseason, that guy could be back and you could conceivably still use the red shirt on him, and he could still help, and he could help you win big games down the stretch. I wonder if we'll see like a player who wasn't in the plans during the season emerge from somebody in the postseason. It's possible, especially with all the postseason games we got now. It's possible that could happen.
It's more likely because of an injury, either one to them or one to someone else.
Sure. Now, you're an advocate that the incoming freshman who enrolled early should be allowed to play in the January postseason games, right?
I think so. Well, I mean, as long as we have, I mean, I think if the transfer portal rule changes, that'll alleviate some of that. But I mean, the problem of
there also aren't enough January postseason games, right? Because we're you got to get pretty deep into the playoff to
I think it would need to be more than you've been accepted into school. I think you need to have started classes. So. We'll see. All right, we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive. Again, love for you to join in. Anything on your mind as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Ryan Wade.
Wade.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls, and let's get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon, y'all. I had a hypothetical come to mind a couple days ago and just wanted y'all's thoughts on this. If Hugh Freeze had not taken the Auburn job after the 2022 season, if he remained at Liberty – and Liberty had a good team in their first year without him. And he had a very good season at Liberty last year. With his relationship with Nick Saban, would he have been a more attractive coaching position for Alabama than Kalen DeBoer was?
No. I think that he would have needed more success at the major conference level as a coach to convince Alabama that he was the right guy for the job.
I think he probably would have been in a second tier.
I think a lot of fans would have been calling for Hugh.
But I think Bama was, you know, when you saw that they went after DeBoer and Florida State guy, Norvell, they were probably going to swing high. Yeah, they were probably going to swing higher to begin with. But yeah, I mean, if they'd have gotten to a second tier, I think he would have made sense, but Alabama was definitely going to try to swing a little higher, right off the bat with this surge.
It's interesting. And another thing I was thinking about just super quick is with friends I was talking the other day about head coaches in the league now who, if you had to bet money, will win multiple SEC championships in their coaching career. And honestly, I only had one person on that list, and that's probably Sark at Texas.
Of the new ones?
Wait, so hold on. So
of anyone.
Anyone
at this point on?
Anyone in the coach, anyone in the any current SEC coach that you think will win multiple conference titles? Kirby's not done winning SEC titles.
But Sark's a good pick.
I think it would be a surprise if DeBoer didn't win at least one because of the program he's stepping into.
Yeah, but you're saying multiple.
But you're right. Multiple's a different animal.
I think Kirby and I think if you had to pick another one outside of Kirby, I think Sark's a really good pick because he's got a really good shot this year.
Kiffin's a fine choice, but he might not do it at Ole Miss. I mean, but he could absolutely. He doesn't have to do it at Ole Miss to fulfill it.
I guess, but
I think always Eli you and Ole Miss is an option.
Well, no, I'm not saying Kiffin's going to do it at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
you said.
I wonder if he'll stay in college football forever.
Lane Kiffin.
Mm.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to wonder too.
Anyway, thank you guys. Just a couple fun hypotheticals.
Yeah, that is. That's a fun question.
Well, he's still the Lane Kiffin answer. That every Auburn fan wanted after the 2022 season. I mean, it's not like
fans.
Yeah,
want,
but and he and he, and he didn't and he didn't do anything. I mean, he won games in 2023.
If he does it at Florida. Like he would have to go to Florida because I can't see anywhere else.
I think
but here's
we're still talking about a place that has.
Here's my other thing. Here's my other thing, and I think Bill is on the right track here. If he goes back to the NFL, you look at it. You look at Ole Miss. You know, he's a guy that's relying on the transfer portal. He's relying it's not a built to last situation. And I do wonder how much. I mean, I think Lane Kiffin with ultimate resources. You know, could be a really good recruiter. He recruited well at USC, for sure. But I do wonder how much of it is just like, at the end of the day, he's a dude who just wants to scheme up plays and have his, he doesn't seem to be sold into the 24/7, 365 lifestyle that is recruiting at a really high level, which makes sense for him to jump to hey, go back to the NFL. If he's successful enough in college where the NFL gives him another chance and they look at him and say, hey, we'll give you the players. Just, you know, get them in the right spots.
I'll tell you what, with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, I would think it's gonna be tougher for anybody to be, you know, winning back to back to back type.
Oh, yeah. You think Brian Kelly's got a conference title or two in him at some point? I mean, LSU.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised.
No. I mean, that's a guy who's won a lot everywhere in his college football career.
And he's always going to have talent at LSU. I just wonder how long that one's going to last. I not saying that he's going to be like it's going to be a fall off, but like there's really high expectations, and you know,
he's not
LSU has a quick trigger.
He's not a 40-year-old either.
Yes.
I mean, you know. So.
I mean, if we're looking here in 2, 3, 4 years and Brian Kelly hasn't gotten LSU to the playoff and won an SEC title with them.
Hadn't gotten to the playoff, 12-team playoff. If LSU doesn't get to a 12-team playoff
in the next couple of years, yeah,
two or 3 years, then
they'll be ready to run
him
off. Oh, sure.
There was earlier today. There was a story on ESPN.com about Kiffin. Chris Lowe wrote a piece, and there were some details about Kiffin's decision to stay at Ole Miss instead of take the Auburn job after 22. And I guess he was leaning towards it, and there was a slideshow by his daughter and her friends about why he should stay at Ole Miss.
Yes.
I
remember hearing about that last year. Yeah.
And I guess there'd been he had made a move previously that had been really unpopular with his family. Maybe it was moving from Los Angeles when he took the Bama job. Maybe
he didn't have a choice, was it Tennessee to
USC?
No, I think it was the decision to like leave Los Angeles to go take the Bama job when his family was in Los Angeles. I know he needed to go. I need
he
to find
didn't
work.
Have a job.
He did, but I mean,
could it be the FAU job?
No, I think no. He was fired by Alabama. Like I mean,
No. Well,
yeah, I mean, well, after taking, I'm pretty sure it had to do with leaving Los Angeles was the first one.
Well, gee, and I mean, the family one, that tells you family might be concerned at some point when the buyout runs out and you don't have a job. I mean, yeah, it'd be great to stay somewhere if you didn't have to work ever.
Okay, so I'm reading from the article now. Kiffin's oldest daughter, Landry, is a sophomore at Ole Miss. She moved to Oxford from Los Angeles prior to her senior year of high school to be with her father. In fact, had it not been for Landry, her dad might be coaching at Auburn right now. Kiffin was leaning towards taking the Auburn job toward the end of the 22 season when Landry came to him with a heartfelt message. Quote, "You left me one time for another job when you went to Alabama, and now I'm here with you, and you're going to do it again."
Okay, how old was she? Was she, what, like 12 or 13
she
did that?
She probably would have been,
and didn't realize that Daddy needed a job.
Landry and her friends created a slideshow complete with music, showing all of them together with Kiffin at Ole Miss. Meanwhile, the school was prepared to sweeten his deal. Kiffin wound up signing a new 6-year contract in November 2022 that was extended another year in December 23 and pays him $9 million.
Isn't his buyout like nothing?
$9 million annually through the 2029 season, and it's a very coach friendly buyout if he wants to.
If he wants to leave, it's like nothing.
If they don't make the playoff this year, it's going to be very disappointing. When you look at their schedule. And you know what they supposedly have.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it feels like they have a better shot of. I mean, this is probably
this is the best shot
in the era in the division play like 92 on era. This feels like Ole Miss's best
Alabama
shot.
You don't have Alabama on your schedule,
but but even then, you're still talking about an Ole Miss team that's picked behind three other teams in the SEC. Right? I mean, they're still picked behind Georgia, Bama, and Texas in the polls and at media days. So they have a good shot of. I would think they have a better shot of making the playoff than making the SEC championship game.
Oh yeah.
And that's
what matters.
And that's get to 10-2, beat the right team. You're maybe in there. But
I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when I see it with them.
They got talent.
I just don't know if they have the dudes up front. That's just going to be my thing. And the way teams build rosters with dudes up front is they recruit and they develop.
It sort of reminds me a little bit of Lincoln Riley.
We were playing a game.
Lincoln just his teams just don't seem to have guys on the defensive side of the ball.
He's been to the playoff.
He has, but I mean, if he had defense, he would have won some titles.
Well, he'd have held off Georgia in that game in 17.
He had offensive lines at Oklahoma too.
Yes, he did.
I don't see that at Ole Miss as much.
We were talking when the AP preseason poll came out. It's like who's a team in the top 10 that you feel confident won't make the playoff? Who's a team not in the top 10 you feel like has a really good shot to make the playoff? I mean, if I had to pick a team, I mean, in hindsight, I probably should have picked Florida State. Because
now I can say Florida State
looks like, but I mean, I had Ole Miss like made sense as one of those teams to To Justin's point about skepticism, like, you got to actually do it before you can feel confident that someone's going
to
get it done.
They're most sure fun to watch, and that's what and that catches a lot of people. I mean, it's like, man, they're so fun to watch. And Lane's a fun guy.
Ole Miss's schedule, 4 winnable non-conference games, although they do go to Wake Forest week 3. Your home games in conference: Kentucky,
you get Georgia,
Oklahoma, Georgia, and Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. Road games in conference: South Carolina, LSU, Arkansas, and Florida.
If I'm picking top 10 team I'm most confident in to make the playoff, I'll go Oregon.
No, top 10 team that won't make the playoff.
Oh, won't make the playoff.
Yeah, top 10 team.
Team that's not in the top 10 that will.
I got it around. Top 10 that won't, Penn State.
Penn State was Barrett's answer. I think. I've seen people picking West Virginia on Saturday to win that game. When that game in Morgantown.
Yeah, big game, James. Nah, not for me. Outside the top 10.
I mean, I think Notre Dame's losing Saturday night. So
outside the top 10, Utah.
Yeah,
Utah as a Big 12 champion.
Big 12 champion's been the popular pick for that one too.
Yeah,
whether it's Oklahoma State or Utah or Gus
Kansas
at
State.
UCF. Yeah. Kansas. Kansas State, I think, are both in that conversation for sure.
I don't think UCF's in that mix.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
They didn't even get votes.
They didn't get votes, but we'll see.
They're technically number 49.
They got a vote from me.
Well, they're not in the top 10, then. So that's
right. That's they're eligible.
Thing. That's right.
They're not in the top 25. They're not in the top 30. They're not in the top 40.
That's a really
you know what?
Shot.
Look at their schedule. And try to find. I mean, they've got a
look at this.
That's
I've been playing it.
I'm watching enviable
schedule.
I'm trying to find something to watch after Bad Monkey last night, and I'm watching the SEC Network, and I'm hearing them talk about dark horses. Who do they have for their dark horses? Tennessee was a dark horse. It's like, wait, top 15 teams aren't dark horses to contend for the conference.
I was going to say, dark horses for what?
They need to be in the
to contend for the SEC.
Would you now? Here's my thing, though. Would
the team pick fifth in the league?
Yeah, that's not very dark.
Well, I mean, it does feel like this year we're light on dark horses and heavier on contenders, though, right?
Yeah.
Like,
so you want to pick a dark?
Would A&M qualify as a dark horse?
Yes. Yeah. I think
okay.
So,
yeah. I kind of lump A&M, Tennessee, and Oklahoma together, and they're all pretty close in the polls. And I would think any of them would be outside the immediate list of favorites to win the title. Maybe not reaching the point of dark horse status, but like if your favorites are Bama, Georgia, Texas, LSU, and Ole Miss, would a dark horse be anybody else? Like, is Missouri? Like you said, these are top 15 teams we're talking about.
I don't know. I just feel like I think you want a little more of a reach.
Yeah.
You want a little more of this team's really going to surprise this year.
I'm talking myself into Florida being better than people think.
We'll find out.
I don't know
out.
If I'm ready
I mean,
for...
it seems
Miami's
like,
not the team I need to learn anything from.
No, you're right.
Yeah, Miami, it's like, if they beat Miami at home, I'm like, yeah, it's Miami. Like, you know, we've seen this.
Miami, who's one game better than Florida
it's,
over the last
it's
two
a world
years.
Of, it's exactly. a world of hurt for the losing coach. It's not like you don't
Actually,
get a
half game better.
It's not a reprieve for the winning coach because they have too many landmines like they still have to navigate on the schedule. But it's a real tough start for whoever drops that game.
We're gonna talk about the game of the night in college football tonight.
Are you one of these Colorado people?
No,
like the,
absolutely not.
No, I mean, like you're really obsessed with the Colorado game because you think they might lose.
No,
to the FC? Okay.
I don't care.
That's the one that I'm like, is it NC State?
It's UFC? Coastal Carolina, Jacksonville State. That game should be fun.
Watch out for Rich Rod.
That game should be fun.
UNC, not NC State.
That one's UNC. I think Jacksonville State's 3.5.
Like that's right.
UNC Minnesota just got pushed back due to lightning. It's gonna kick late tonight.
Oh, okay.
So. You got that going on. So it's a pretty spaced out one. I'm trying to figure out who else. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess technically those are the only other. Like, Colorado's 10.5 and North Dakota State. I'm trying to see if there's any other close games on here. Ooh, man. Ooh.
No, it's light. Jackson any. State, ULM, I believe, is
it's a 5.5 point spread.
ULM, a slight favorite.
Buffalo's a 3.5 point favorite against Lafayette.
It could be a bad night. Not Louisiana Lafayette.
No, like Lafayette College.
Yeah, like Patriot League, Lafayette.
And San Jose State is a 1.5 point favorite against Sacramento State.
it could be a bad night for the Sun.
Okay.
I mean, the Sun Belt with if Coastal and ULM lose, that's a tough night. I mean, those are two losable games against. Well, in one case, an FCS team, and in the other case, Jacksonville State, who's making the jump.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. A reminder again that we've got David, our first visit of the season with David Pascal from Chattanooga coming up at 5. And our first edition of Tiger Takes, Jacob Goins, host of On the Line and, of course, voice of Auburn High football, interviewed Eugene earlier because football team is tied up while we're on the air. They're usually pretty busy in the afternoon, so... We'll have that recorded interview with Eugene Asante with Tiger Takes coming up at 5:30 this afternoon.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing from Eugene and getting an update, a preview of the upcoming game and hearing about how his offseason went. Jacob had a conversation with Eugene Asante earlier today. We will run that for you closer to the 6 o'clock hour.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. Hey, Justin, wanted to get your thoughts on, I mean, we've had a chance to spend time with more than half the roster here this fall. Just from the players we've talked to and from what you've seen, who are some guys that have really caught your attention, gotten your attention this fall from what you've been able to see and maybe, you know, hear from either them or other players talking about them?
Yeah, I think we had some guys this year, or I guess this preseason, that I wasn't really expecting to hear a ton about, or as much as we did, and we did. Some of these young defensive backs down the stretch have been really interesting to me. Like Jay Crawford, Caleb Harris are two that I'm like, they could get into the mix, especially if they get off to really strong starts this
season. Caleb Harris appears to be, right now, looking like he may be the number three safety.
Yeah. No, I mean, that could be definitely a spot for him. And I really like some of these other guys they've got, in the room, in that young defensive back. Like, we've heard a lot about J.C. Hart, obviously, mm-hmm. but Caleb Harris and Jack Crawford to be two true freshmen getting the amount of love that they got, I think has been one of the more – surprising things for me. Malik Blockton getting the push that he's gotten, I think, has been really, really impressive.
Not only was he the first guy out there when we were able to watch the practice, but on the depth chart, he's the first of the oars at defensive tackle.
And I'll say Braden Joyner's been one that's caught my eye a ton, and the fact that we even got to talk to him is a guy that, you know, thought, hey, he could be in the mix, maybe next man up on the interior.
Before spring practice?
No. I didn't think that before fall camp. Honestly. I
heard he had a good summer, but I mean that's sure. The first time we'd really heard much about Braden.
Yeah. But I mean it just goes to show you with the offensive line. I mean it you can get it from anywhere. Offensive line is one of those positions where it's weird to evaluate. It's weird to scout. Development doesn't always go the same. And so sometimes you'll get some of these guys who were not big name dudes coming out of high school, you know, making moves. Tyler Johnson potentially starting mm-hmm. to left tackle. That's another one of those. So
if Tyler Johnson starts, and it seems like he's going to, the way this has trended over the last 2 weeks, sort of away from Percy Lewis and towards Tyler, like that's the biggest development I'd say in fall camp as far as what we thought we were going to see August 1st versus what we have now. I didn't know where we were expecting competition on the offense, maybe receiver for starting jobs, but. To have Tyler Johnson emerge as the team's best option at left tackle, if that's what happens, would be right there at the top of the biggest developments for fall camp.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that at all. I thought Tyler Johnson was heading in the right direction for sure, but it felt like okay, he's a guy that could be up next, you know, might be a starter next season, you know, somebody they really, really like. But the fact that he might be Auburn's best option at left tackle, and that might be the piece, you know, goes to show you that you can go get these guys out of the transfer portal, and you just know, you never know exactly how they're going to click early on. It's not to say completely write off Percy Lewis or anything, but just, you know, it's been very telling that Auburn's had to mix and match and switch over there over a guy that, you know, they brought in to be their left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think it's likely we're going to see at least three left tackles?
Sounds like Saturday. It. Yeah, that's what Freeze said on Monday, and I think that's where it's going to go. I think Auburn would love to keep Dylan Wade at guard if they could. And if that's the case, Tyler Johnson or Percy Lewis, who does well in a game like this, you know.
Are you going to know?
You might not know, but it's kind of like practice, you know. It's like you're going to get more of an evaluation, and then you see what you get next week. You may have a decision by New Mexico, you may have a decision by Arkansas, but yeah, I think it's just another step in the evaluation. I don't expect them to have an answer in week two.
Yeah,
but I do think they're going to find out some more information about those guys.
And I don't know how much they want to play Wade at left tackle to see what they get out of Wade at left tackle. I think the issue is that they don't have. They want to see guards. They want to see what Braden Joyner looks like at left guard. Right. I mean, that's where. I mean, if you play Wade at left tackle, you're going into a situation where you're introducing a guy who hasn't played much college football.
Sure, yeah.
As your new left guard. Now, if they go with Tate Johnson, it's a little bit different because Tate's more.
I think if they're playing Dylan Wade at left tackle because he might be their best option.
I agree with what you said. I think they want to keep Dylan at guard.
Yes,
they want to keep him there.
But
if he's the best guy they have at tackle, then he goes.
You have
there.
More guards. You feel like you right. can play. Then yeah,
they'll deal with the consequences and play Dylan at tackle and play whoever the best
play
option
Tate
is.
Tate Johnson at left guard.
I think if they like what they see out of Joyner. Percy and Tyler, or they feel like it's good enough, or it's as good, or Dylan's not going to be any better than that, then they'll be okay. They'll see what they can do there, mm-hmm. mixing those.
It's about finding the best combination, not necessarily like the best five, like in or like you have to. There's so much cohesion that has to go into that.
Well, it's a bit like it's an equation, right? Where it's like you know Dylan Wade's going to be there, and it's just a matter. There's almost like bracketed competition to be the person next to Dylan Wade. If Dylan Wade's the left tackle, then you've got Tate Johnson.
You look
and Brandon
at it as combinations, right?
Yeah,
you know, like. Is Dylan Wade and a guard, where does that rank in comparison to Percy Lewis and Dylan Wade or Tom Johnson? And so you got to run all those combos out there because that's what it is more than just, okay, who is, you know, do we think who's the fourth or fifth best offensive
it's
lineman?
It's like, what is the best for the left side of the line?
Yes.
That's what it is. Not necessarily just the best left tackle. If it leaves you a bigger hole at guard,
sure.
Then you
or vice versa.
Right.
You know, best left guard might not be what you want to do if it, you know, opens you up at left tackle.
Man, what Auburn would love to find out is that, they have a better situation than they thought. It's all because of the great pass rush that Auburn's going to have this year.
I think there's a chance that, like, we'll get to the end of the season and be like, all right, Auburn's offensive line held up. Man, that pass rush was as good as advertised. And I think there's a really good shot of that, just knowing the talent level on that side.
That wouldn't be a bad outcome.
No.
The issue, the one doubt I have about that would be there were numbers last year indicating that pass rushes that weren't super elite still gave Percy Lewis trouble at times. Right?
Yes,
so there were times.
Yeah.
So that would make.
Well,
me
again,
think,
that's if Percy Lewis wins. The
if
job,
Percy
which,
Lewis, yeah, you don't have
which,
any.
Which today I would not bank on that.
Well, you don't have. Yeah, you don't have any metrics on Tyler Johnson against pass rushers as a college football player. So it's a little bit different there. But like with Percy, if he had performed on it, because we were talking about like he was excellent at times last year for Mississippi State, but it felt like.
Mississippi State's offense was a mess.
Yes, Mississippi State's offense was a mess, and
it
even
was.
And even so, yeah. Like yeah, Percy had some consistency issues as well as the rest of the team. So you know, it's tough to project you know what he did at Mississippi State and take that and translate it to Auburn.
It's also tough with the offensive line because a lot of times people are looking at like PFF grades, and it's just like, man, I know who does PFF grades, man. It's some unpaid dude charting games, right? And it's like the grades can't be the be-all, end-all of everything.
Oh, you can't. No, especially for individual offensive linemen.
But, yes, it's not like Percy Lewis was a set in stone left tackle, nothing wrong with him whatsoever on an offense that performed well last year. No, there were issues individually and corporately with Mississippi State's offense last year with him in it.
There was a belief that Percy Lewis could take a step and be that kind of left tackle.
Sure, like,
And there still may be.
There's still a chance.
I mean, he is a huge guy who moves pretty well.
But the thing is right now is
there's more to it than that.
Yeah, and they haven't figured out their best combination right there. And it could be Tyler Johnson. And if it's Tyler Johnson, it's going to be kind of like with the running Connor Lue last year out there. Like, it's valuable. There's going to be some growing pains because you're getting thrown into the fire.
Yeah, at least he's a second-year guy. And it's his second year with Jake Thornton.
And he's gone up against some really good edge rushers and defensive linemen in practice instead of like, hi, you were beating up on high school kids last year. Now you got to go block, Nick Overton or somebody like that. Like, good luck.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hip pain is not to be taken lightly. It could be a sign of hip impingement.
I'm at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here of hour number one on this Thursday afternoon. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer in along with Bill and Dan. We're going to have David Paschal join us in hour number two. We've got Tiger Takes coming up at 5:30 with Eugene Asante. Ferg, talk a little bit about what all you got going, what's going on there lately and upcoming on the Observer.
It's been a busy week at the Observer. Had a lot of stuff from Monday and Tuesday. We got to watch practice for like nearly an hour the other day. Got a lot of observations from that. Wrote a story on Jeremiah Wright that a lot of people liked. It's really cool to think about. This is his fifth year. This will be his first start in Jordan-Hare.
Yeah.
And only his second start ever. It's just a really cool story from him. Think about all he's gone through to get to this point. A lot of pregame stuff. Did a story today on how many defensive backs does Auburn really need? We've heard a lot about like, okay, you got to play. We got to play all these guys. We got to play a lot of guys. Well, I went back into the numbers and said like, okay, how many do you really need to make it through a season in defensive backs? You can check that out. Mailbag tomorrow. Game preview podcast with Dan tomorrow.
Doesn't part of that depend on how well your first guys are doing?
Sure, but it's just like over the course of 5 years, it was just like here's how many defensive backs they had play, more than 100 or 200 snaps, and just kind of how it goes. And I found some interesting things there, like including how many corners you really need to have to get through a season, how many safeties you really need to have, and then how much can you mix and match with dudes. So you can check that out at auburnobserver.com. We're running our special through Saturday morning, so $45 to get you for a full year.
Who's somebody – we've been talking to other people about this week. Who's somebody that you think could put himself on the radar of Auburn fans who haven't paid super close attention to the offseason with his performance on Saturday? Who's somebody people who could open some eyes with or break out?
Let's see, guys that
offense or defense. Anybody comes to mind? Somebody you think could be
okay. This one's kind of a cop out because he's a starter. But like, I don't think people really know how good Robert Lewis is. Like, I think Robert Lewis is going to end up being.
I believe I predicted yesterday that you would have said Robert Lewis in that game because you've said before that he's going to lead the team in receptions, right?
I think he is. Yeah. I think he's got a really good chance too. As much RPO and quick stuff they're going to run, he's that guy.
Yeah, well, you're right. He doesn't get near the hype, the talk that the freshman nor Keandre Lambert.
Yeah, Keandre being the new guy has gotten that a lot.
It's a bit of a cop out. My answer is a bit of a cob out. Because I'm thinking Jeremiah could make a big play or two.
And I think he could. I don't know.
I know it's tough as a three-headed running back, but he seems to be.
He's not. I doubt he'll have as many opportunities.
But he also seems like somebody who maybe doesn't need as many opportunities to make a big play.
Four carries for 111 yards.
Yeah, Jeremiah Cobb is, and I would think maybe the most. Is it betting too much on his potential to say of the three running backs, he might be the one who represents the realist big play threat?
Yes.
You'd agree with that?
Because Jarquez. Him and Jarquez,
Jarquez has had some home runs too in his Auburn career.
Yeah.
And DeMar Alston has the ability to do it. I mean, you haven't seen a home run or two from DeMar, but I think he's somebody who has that ability as well. But yeah, I think Cobb, a big play from Cobb. Sam Jackson? Question mark? Is that
maybe? Yeah. I'm trying to think on defense.
I just wonder. I mean, here's the thing. I want, and I think everybody wants to see a freewheeling, wide open offense. But there's only going to be so many plays, and everybody's not going to. It's going to be tough for multiple receivers,
eight guys to have 100 yards each.
Catches. It's like,
especially if you're running RPOs. If that defense for
A&M can't stop.
Yeah, well, and if they're playing back or they're spread out because they're worried about the passing game, they could just hammer the ball at these guys.
And you could have
it could be a lot of
300 yard rushers.
And you'll have the whole thing. We do this every year. But it's like they'll have the thing. It'll be like, well, they ain't gonna do anything different. They're just handing the ball off. Well, you got to look at what everything else is happening.
If you're running a real RPO and that's what they're giving you, and you
to watch the receiver. Sometimes when Auburn
quarterback's not gonna grade well.
When Auburn hands the ball off, watch what the receivers are doing, because it's not always just plowing ahead. Sometimes they're running their own thing as well. So, yeah, I think there's some of that. I was trying to think of somebody on defense. He got a lot of buzz in the first couple of weeks for good reason. I think it kind of cooled off a little bit, just people talking about him. But Kieron Crawford's going to hurt somebody on Saturday, I think.
Yep,
it's just,
I think so too.
Because I think Amaris is too obvious. I think Amari, five-star. Morris is too obvious. Kieron Crawford, though, would be my pick there on defense.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. David Pascal joins us from Chattanooga on the other side. Stick with us for hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Bill and Dan, joined by Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Hour number two of the drive brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And, well, I'll give out the numbers, although we are about to head to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390 because we are efforting David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, who has been a regular guest with us through football season through the years. So looking forward to welcoming him back in. You can text us as well. And the Drive text box is 334-564-1840.
That's right. Presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
And with that said, let's welcome in. And again, I did get the call letters right a little while ago. I wasn't looking at it. I said, David, let me know he'd entered the transfer portal at the end of, around spring, I guess he entered the transfer portal, and is now with Sports Talk on WGOW. David, man, it's great to talk to you again. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Hope you guys are doing well.
All right, so we were trying to figure, and so Dan was like, "So is it the big gal?"
Yeah, I think WGOW is just a little bit easier to say. I was actually on this station years and years ago before I moved over to ESPN Chattanooga, but then ESPN Chattanooga, I was actually driving back from the Citrus Bowl, the Tennessee-Iowa game, and got the word that the station was going to sell and that the show was going to run through March. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, fortunately, I was only off the air for like two or three weeks, and then I was back with my old buddies, and so that it's all worked out really, really well. It really has.
Oh, that's great, and of course, still with the Times Free Press.
Correct, and this is gosh. I don't know what number
it's
football
been a
season this is.
Yeah.
Football, I guess it's 35 because I started in 1990. I worked at Auburn in 89, and that was the year that Auburn won its third straight SEC and played Ohio State in what was then the Hall of Fame Bowl, which became the Outback Bowl and is now like the ReliaQuest Bowl. But anyway, that was my last deal at Auburn, and then I went to the paper in January of 90. So, yeah, 35 football season.
Wow. Well, this is going to be a really interesting one. Well, I'm assuming it is, but I mean, there's so many things different. I mean, you have to make sure you know what league teams are in with the conference realignment, where we have the All Coast Conference now with what used to be the ACC, and the numbers of the conferences don't have anything to do with the number of teams that are in the leagues anymore, and we've got a 12-team playoff here at the end of the year. So, I mean, big changes for college football.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, as we talk now, Florida State's in 17th place in the ACC, so that's new.
Yeah, behind
they
Cal.
Couldn't even ever. Nobody could ever be that bad before.
They're going to catch Stanford pretty soon in the ACC standings. You know, they'll get back to where it is. Trying to decode the conference realignment would take up the rest of our time with David, so we might as well move on to. I mean, it's a week one full of SEC teams playing pretty big, pretty big non-conference matchups. David, it feels like one of the more loaded week one slates we've ever had.
Oh yeah, and it's, you know, we've talked about this before, obviously, in the past few years. I mean, I think conference realignment is the devil. I just think there's a lot. I'm not a fan of a 12-team playoff either. But the one thing you can't argue is just the inventory of college football games for the television viewer is going to be fantastic. And I mean, you could, you know, I remember back in the days when my television set had ABC, NBC, and CBS, and that was it. And this Saturday, that wouldn't be an issue because you can turn on ABC at noon and catch Georgia-Clemson. Then you've got the Florida-Miami game on ABC after that, and then you've got Texas A&M, Notre Dame on ABC after that. So, I mean, that is just an absolute incredible triple header on one network.
David, are you going to be at Clemson, Georgia?
You know, I'm not. I do all the Tennessee games, and with Tennessee playing the team here, Chattanooga, there's obviously double interest in that. So there's a little bit of a stagger there. I guess Georgia-Clemson kicks off at noon. And then, you know, there's that weird, and I say noon Eastern, there's that weird SEC network time of 12:45, 11:45 Central. So, yeah, there's so many changes this year. I mean, you think about the two-minute warning, the in-helmet communication, and Oklahoma State, the first time they run out on the field, they're going to run out there with QR codes on the backs of their helmets. It's a very different world.
So I wanted to ask you about that Clemson-Georgia game because, I mean – so many years that would have been, hey, Clemson, Georgia opened the year. You're talking about one of the most close, competitive week one games. Georgia's a 13.5-point favorite over a Clemson team that was, you know, not perfect, but it finished pretty well last year. I think that this is just a great example of, like, how much the public, you know, and Vegas expects Georgia to be better than pretty much the field because a really good team like Clemson, you know, being almost a, you know, full two-touchdown underdog in a neutral side is pretty crazy.
You know, and I saw Cade Klubnik's first start for Clemson. That came against Tennessee in the Orange Bowl. And, you know, at the time you're writing these articles about young and promising, and I think he's okay. I just don't think he's great. And, you know, when you're talking about Carson Beck, I just think Georgia has a decided advantage at quarterback. And really, when you go across the board, I think Georgia was just the talent they've got. I mean, that offensive line is just so veteran. And I know Clemson has some experience there, too. You know, I picked it 31-13 in today's paper. I actually think Georgia covers. You know, Georgia's just, you know, it's when they get to Mercedes-Benz in December, they sometimes struggle against Bama. But, boy, when they open up seasons, what they did to Oregon a couple of years ago, I was at that game. That was just an absolute massacre. So, I just, you know, Clemson did win its last five games, but, you know, they had to rally to beat Kentucky in the Gator Bowl, and Kentucky was the team Georgia beat 51-13 a year ago. I like Georgia. That 13.5 being under two touchdowns makes me like that one a decent amount.
To me, if Clemson finds themselves down multiple scores in the fourth quarter, they could still be a highly competitive ACC team. If Clemson is in a very close game with Georgia in the fourth quarter, then I would think that Clemson has a chance. I mean, even if they lose, like if Clemson's in this game in the fourth quarter, I would think that spells trouble for the rest of the ACC, because I don't know how many ACC teams have a roster that can approximate Georgia's.
I agree. And I mean, if Clemson plays Georgia tough and Georgia wins, say, by a couple of touchdowns, I mean, you're talking, you know, before we even get to Labor Day, the ACC has lost its two prize possessions for that. I mean, you know, Clemson and FSU can still get in the playoff, and ACC champion will get in the playoff, but boy, you don't want to have your top two teams already, of course, the two teams that are suing you, but you don't want to have those two teams with one loss already.
And then another I think, is in for quite a battle Saturday in Gainesville. Miami and Florida, you know, I guess we focus so much on the SEC, or we hear so much of that as well, that it's all about the pressure and the hot seat for Billy Napier. But Mario Cristobal's 12-13 in 2 years.
Oh, and you had the Tech game last year, which was just inexplicable how that one ended. But, yeah, I just think that to me, that, and I know we'll probably get to Texas A&M Notre Dame, mm-hmm. I just think those two games are impossible to pick. I mean, it's amazing that Florida has only 12 players still on the roster from Billy Napier's first year. I mean, that kind of turnover is just not healthy. But, you know, they're at home, and you know, Miami's not, like you said, they hadn't exactly been world beaters. I know Miami's the slight favorite. I kind of like to pick some upsets. So I know it's a very mild one, but I went with the Gators in this one.
Yeah, let's see this time next year how many players from Hugh Freeze's first team are still on the Auburn roster, because I think there could be a similar amount of turnover from year one to year three. In part because of how many
Auburn doesn't have any juniors. Yeah. I mean, they're seniors and youngsters.
How many juniors and seniors were brought in to you know, as part of?
I don't
of
know. There'll be a good. I would be surprised if there aren't a good bit of the freshmen from last year who are still around.
That's true. You would at least have some freshmen from last. That is accurate. And David,
well,
in the case,
and Dan, you bring. I think that's a fair comparison, because I think for the last couple of years, Auburn and Florida, two teams with, you know, multiple SEC championships in the last 30 or 40 years. You're talking about two teams with national championships in fairly recent history, but those are two programs right now that you absolutely need name tags more than any other teams in the SEC. I mean, I just think Auburn and Florida have had that kind of turnover where, you know, in some years it's half the roster. I think Hugh Freeze inherited half his roster was new when he coached his very first game last year. So, yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher to follow these teams, some of them.
Oh, you're right. I mean, just across the country, keeping up and having an idea what rosters are going to look like.
Well, keep
but
in
I'll
mind,
say
too,
like
Harsin's last yeah. year, there was incredible turnover, yeah, and then more of it in Hugh's first.
I yeah, mean, my so. My feeling is that Hugh Freeze needed to turn his roster over more than Billy Napier.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny because covering Tennessee, I mean, I know we're not going to delve into Tennessee UTC and the breakdown of that, but Tennessee has a roster where they have six multi-year seniors on the offensive line and five multi-year seniors on the defensive line. I mean, the guts of that program finally are starting to look like what your Alabamas and Georgias typically look like. Now, I'm not saying Tennessee's going to look like that every year, but I think this year it does kind of look like that. And of course, you know, when Heupel first got there, they were just trying to outscore you, you know, when they were trying to win games 45-42. But, I mean, Tennessee has – I think Tennessee's offensive and defensive lines should be really strong this year. And more importantly, kind of what we were just talking about, you know who Cooper Mays is. I mean, he's been Cade Mays' little brother, and now he's on his fifth year at Tennessee. So, I mean, it's names like that you're kind of used to now with Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned you mentioned another one, that Notre Dame at Texas A&M. I mean, you've got – one of the things we were talking about yesterday, we'll sort of tie the Miami-Florida game back into it. We were talking about transfer quarterbacks and the big-name transfer quarterbacks. A lot of times it takes them a little bit to get going. And if they can manage 2 years, they're usually significantly better in the second year. But, I mean, you look at Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels at LSU – it took them a little bit to get going, and you're asking a lot of a Cam Ward at Miami or a Riley Leonard at Notre Dame to go on the road into an SEC stadium and pull off a win.
Oh, I mean, you just look at last year's Heisman finalists, and when you're talking about Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix, those mm-hmm. were all guys in their second year of a program after transferring. So, I mean, that would seemingly bode well for a Peyton Thorne. That would seemingly bode well for a Graham Mertz. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be an interesting storyline to follow to see if these second-year guys can do that. And, you know, you talk about that game in College Station. I give Notre Dame a slight edge there just because I think Marcus Freeman, there's just a little bit more stability with him now, and I just don't know. I think Elko could be good at Texas A&M. I just don't know if Texas A&M is going to be good from day one.
Is there a and it's not like there's a ton of quality upset picks to look at. Like you said, the SEC games are
We got to get to Sunday nights too.
You're right. We got LSU.
Speaking of 45-42, defenses aren't better than they were last year. That may be a third quarter score.
Is there an under the radar game from Saturday you like?
Involving an SEC team. I am curious about Vanderbilt. Virginia Tech. I mean, I know Virginia Tech's like a two-touchdown favorite, but
I want Vandy to hang in there. But I just don't know. And
did you know that Vanderbilt has 8 quarterbacks on their roster? Mm-hmm. I've never heard of that. They've got 8. They list 8 quarterbacks on their roster.
That sounds like somebody said one time. If you've got 8, I don't know if you've got 1.
No, they've got 1. They only need 1.
I know.
Yeah, it's crazy that they would have that much depth.
Yeah, I know Auburn's familiar with the one they've got because he was really good in Jordan Hare last year.
Very.
But, yeah, that is just a random deal that I've never heard of before.
Yeah, so what do you think about the game in Vegas between LSU and USC?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, LSU's defense last year was just brutally bad by their standards. I mean, Southern Cal's defense, you know, you've kind of seen that in recent years. But I'm like you. I mean, are both teams going to be that bad on defense again? But, yeah, I mean, from an entertainment standpoint, I mean, you threw out 45-42. I mean, we could be looking at that, which would be wild.
And that would be appropriate in Vegas. Light it up, you know.
Yeah, and, it's an interesting dynamic with these coaches. You have one leaving Oklahoma, one leaving Notre Dame. But, you know, they're starting to settle in. And I know we have Jim Donnan on our show all the time. He says that fans at OU still don't like Lincoln Riley for the way he kind of left in the middle of the night kind of deal. But, in terms of just sheer entertainment, that could be the most entertaining game of the weekend. Oh. But, again, that gives you 3 when you throw in the 2 we talked about, the 3:30 game on ABC and the 7:30 game on ABC Saturday. I mean, like you said, for an opening weekend to have 3 games that you really have no clue. We could talk about it all we want, but we could look like buffoons this time next week when we go over them.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, it's fun. It is great to have something like this to start. Before we run out of time, just wonder what has been the reaction that you've heard from Josh Heupel or others. I mean, as we enter the season here, and Hugh Freeze has talked about this, hey, you're recruiting a class where you don't know what the scholarship limit's going to be. You don't know how many scholarships you're going to have, and you're not sure exactly. We're hearing that things are going to change, but we're not exactly sure what the transfer portal is going to end up as while you're recruiting a class.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to add a lot of fun to it too. And of course, I mean, we're all talking about it from the Auburn and Alabama and Tennessee and Georgia levels, but you know, we've got a guy, Rusty Wright at UTC, who's really good talking about this stuff, and he's on a lot of these committees, and he's just like, you know, when the SEC goes to 105 or the Power Four goes mm-hmm. to 105, he says where you're really going to see it is the group of 5 schools and how they're just going to get left behind, and you're going to see the group of 5 schools actually becoming more like FCS schools. You know, they're going to kind of be coming back to the pack there. And so it's going to be even more of the haves and have-nots from that standpoint. So, yeah, there's a whole lot to be keeping an eye out for in the months ahead for sure.
I mean, the best group of 5 teams in college football right now are probably closer to the best FCS teams than they are to the best Power 5 teams. Like the best, whoever the best Group of Five team is in college football, they would probably play a more competitive game against the FCS champion than they would against Georgia.
Well, and I, you know, case in point could be tonight. I'm intrigued by Colorado, North Dakota State. Did you know North Dakota State is 9-4 lifetime against FBS teams?
Now that's
9-4.
That's Chris Klieman, right? He was winning games there.
Yeah, they actually had a 6-game win streak over FBS teams at one point, and they beat an Iowa team about 8 years ago that was like 13th in the country, and so that would be wild if that game stayed intriguing.
Oh, you're right. That would get a little bit of talk. David, it is great to have you back with us. We really, what you hear from folks all the time wondering, you know, are you going to have him back? And it's like, we're glad that you've been able to squeeze us into your schedule. Let everybody know how they can keep up with you now that you've moved over to WGOW and, of course, following you there with the Times Free Press.
Yeah, it's simple. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW, you know, 3 to 6 Eastern, 2 to 5 Central.
That is great. David, thanks a lot. We look forward to continuing to talk to you during the season.
That sounds great. Have a great weekend, guys.
All right, take care. David Pascal.
Bye, David.
Yep, great to have him back with us. We will get to our first break. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, Drew at the controls. Our thanks to David Pascal joining us from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and WGOW, where he just wrapped up his three-hour show. Sounds like the show that the guys he was with all just moved over.
Yeah, well, and that was a great show, too. So, I mean, kudos to the gal for picking up David Pascal and company and keeping them on the airwaves in Chattanooga, because yeah, nobody does it like David Pascal. I'm happy to have him on the show in the second hour.
We'd love to hear from you if you've got any thoughts, questions, comments about any of the games that we've talked about, or any I'd like to know what fans are wanting to see on Saturday. It's going to be tough to satisfy everybody, because I mean, the one thing I'm a little interested in is how many possessions will teams have, how many plays will you be able to run. It appears that the clock continuing to run, get
quick.
That 2-minute warning, but it looks like there are fewer plays.
Oh, yeah.
That are going to be available in a ball game.
I believe FSU Georgia Tech was the fewest possessions in a game involving a top 25 team in a while. It was something like that, or maybe ACC.
It was low. I didn't know that.
It was very low. Yeah, I mean, those things will move by quick, and that's what makes it interesting for like these like point spreads and all that. It's like you can have these big
score that
you can have these big numbers, but it's like you might not be playing poorly and not able to cover.
Well, I mean, I heard Doug talking about this earlier, and he brought up something. Say, for example, if you only get 7-8 possessions.
Yeah.
And you score on 60 or 70% of them, that's still 40 points.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough to score 50 without somebody else, without the other team helping you. I mean, they're going to need to turn it over the way things appear to be moving now.
Yeah. And I think we've kind of gone away, you know, some teams still do it, but we've kind of gone away from the, you know, play warp speed every snap. I wonder how much of the clock changes are going to affect that, because I think Auburn's going to be a team like a lot of teams have done it now, where it's like if we hit a big play, then we'll run, hurry up, get the line, try to run something up off of that, just because that's where you usually have the defense reeling. But this whole like 3-yard run, then hurry as fast as humanly possible. I wonder if more teams are going to go with that.
The helmet communication, correct, is going to affect that as well.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see.
I mean, that's another thing that Hugh was talking about is, I mean, you're going to have to be very careful not continuing to talk. If it's time to go ahead and get to the line and start making the call, you don't want to be distracting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting transition for sure. Game should be faster, which I think is positive for the in-home experience. But, you know, I wonder how it's going to look like in some of these games where it's supposed to be, you know, blowouts.
I don't know how much. I mean, especially when you play an FCS opponent, like it seems like if the game's interesting, that's probably
that's not good.
It's probably bad.
It's like, interesting like, in the second half.
Yeah, like yes. I don't think Auburn fans want a third. I think there are games this year you're hoping are compelling and riveting, and I don't know if this is one of those that's supposed to be.
Week 1 and week 3 definitely aren't.
Yeah, I think those are games where you would hope that Auburn has enough to overmatch the opponent, overwhelm and start.
At least New Mexico looked pretty good for 3 quarters.
Yeah. Montana State lost a lot from last year's
team. I know. Yeah. But, I mean, I expect
it was weird, though, because it was like that game went in drive for Montana State. It was like they were doing whatever they wanted. Mm-hmm. They were just getting it. They're just getting to the spot and just throwing it. And so,
and that's another FCS versus Group of Five situation there. Granted, Montana State's one of the top FCS programs.
And granted, New Mexico's terrible.
And New Mexico's terrible. But not all that long ago, like – Bad Group of Five programs were still considerably better than.
You could really tell the difference.
Like and it has to do with Alabama A&M too. Where
you would 100% take the top. I would say the top 20 teams at FCS and the bottom 20 teams in FBS. I think I'd take the FCS teams.
Yeah, oh, so,
sure, 100%.
And I don't know if that's.
And I don't know how far down I'd have to go before I start kind of looping it around.
And I feel like that probably wasn't the case recently in college football, where you wouldn't have, but now you have far more players who start as Division I players at the bowl subdivision level. I mean, Andy went through the roster of Alabama A&M.
They're mostly transfers.
These are mostly guys who started as bowl subdivision players coming out of high school and have now ended up at Alabama A&M. And because there are virtually no seniors on the team, all of them are playing for. You can wonder if they're playing for the opportunity to get back into the bowl subdivision. We made the point about Jalen McLeod and the game against A&M, the game J-Mac had against A&M, and how that helped him once he went into the portal, because it was some film against an SEC team in an SEC stadium where he was playing well. I think for anybody with Alabama A&M on Saturday night, you have that. You have that possibility too. You could be,
especially when he said there's just one senior.
There's only exactly
on the 2D.
I mean, in theory, this whole team could be in the transfer portal looking for a gig at the bowl subdivision level. And a strong performance by any one Alabama A&M player on Saturday night could be. Granted, you don't want it to be your only strong performance all season, but a strong performance on Saturday night would probably look pretty good on film as you're trying to if you want to matriculate back to the bowl subdivision level.
And it'll be interesting to see. Alabama A&M's had their 3 post-COVID years, they've had losing records. Before then, they were starting to kind of rumble a little bit in the SWAC. This is their only paycheck game this year. This is their only big paycheck game this year. They do play Austin Peay later on, which is a better FCS team. It'll be very interesting to see. Keep an eye on Alabama A&M. It's just going to be interesting to see if that's a team that, you know, playing out of the SWAC, you know, the SWAC and the MEAC don't feed into the FCS playoffs, or at least not very often they do, because they split off of their own thing with the Celebration Bowl. But I'll be interested to see. Like, if they're doing this big transfer-heavy reloading job, they're, you know, Maynard's in his 7th year. I mean, he's coached some pretty good Alabama A&M teams, like teams that have won 7 and 8 games. So interesting to see if they can kind of get that turnaround going, knowing that the SWAC is going to be Jackson State in the field usually. It'll be interesting to see what that looks like this year.
We will get to our bottom of the hour break, and then we're back with the first edition of Tiger Take. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. And it is time for the first edition of Tiger Takes for this season here on ESPN 106.7. Tiger Takes, once again, with Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante, and it's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Visit them today at 217 North College Street or book online at 12ksalon.net. Jacob Goins from On the Line had some time with Eugene Asante, and it's now time to hear our first edition of Tiger Takes.
It's time for Tiger Takes here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Football season is back, which means it's time for Tiger Takes, and we are just so excited to have this guy back once again. Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante, fan favorite from a year ago, and he's back with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Tiger Takes brought to you each and every week by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Eugene, great to talk to you again once again, and glad that you're back with us for another season.
Yes, sir. I'm glad to be back. I'm excited for Tiger Talk.
Well, let's get into this a little bit, because there's a lot to talk about that happened in the offseason since the end of last year, where I think it's fair to say it was a tough finish to the year. And then so much buzz from the transfer portal and from high school recruiting, and then just a lot more talent on this team coming into this year. What was the offseason like, starting in the spring through the summer and even now into the fall?
I think the word to sum up our offseason was competitive. We got guys coming in that are ready to, you know, contribute in big ways, you know, offensively, defensively. You know, so coach bringing them in through the transfer portal and through high school recruiting has been certainly something that we admire, you know, having new faces in the building, people that are willing to go out late on the line and compete every single day in everything we're doing. So we're certainly excited for this season. There's a lot of guys coming in who are ready to try to prove themselves, and I'm just so excited to see them blossom into what they can be. So, you know, we're ready full force, and we're getting ready for Saturday.
There's so much talk, and has been all offseason, about the receivers that have come in, all those star-studded freshmen, even some of the transfer portal guys as well. And you guys have a unique position on the defense because you have to go against them every day. And so what has that been like for you guys on that side of the football to be going against what is a really, really deep wide receiver room?
Yeah, it's a challenge every single day, going against the elite guys, in my opinion. We understand what Keandre Lambert-Smith brings from coming from Penn State. Certainly somebody that's extremely dynamic with his route running. Certainly somebody that can make those contested catches and stretch the field vertically. So having him has been a great addition. He's kind of molded himself as one of the leaders and focal points in that room. Having Robert Lewis is certainly somebody that is a great anchor point at the slot position. He's certainly somebody that's dynamic in his route running. Can catch the ball and get those rack yards. You know, he's certainly somebody that has great speed, can also take the top off the defense and stretch you vertically. And we understand what Cam Coleman is. You know, Cam Coleman is certainly one of those players that can be a generational player at the wide receiver position. He has the ability to make those 50-50 catches. And I quite frankly haven't seen anybody that's able to go up vertically like Cam Coleman is as a freshman. You know, so... You know, even having those young receivers coming in, so, certainly so much talent. Malcolm Simmons with his speed. Malcolm Simmons is one of the most fastest guys on our team, just being able to run a flat-out run. And Bryce Kane, who has the ability, who's super twitchy in everything he does, can stretch the field vertically. And he's just super dynamic. And I feel like he'll be a big part in the return game this year. So it's so exciting seeing all those guys. I know I'm leaving some guys out, but... It's exciting to see those guys blossom to what they're going to be in. It should be exciting football season with the wide receiver room.
And just a really good challenge for you guys day in and day out on the defensive side, whether it is, you know, the linebacker group for you or even the guys in the secondary. I mean, that's a challenge every single day and should have you guys ready for SEC play that'll get going in week 4 against Arkansas. I'm curious, though, for you specifically, Eugene, you had such a great year last year with so many big time performances, and we were just so honored to talk to you each week about those games. Do you believe that there's a spot in your game, whether it be physicality or just something that you feel that you've gotten better at from last year into this season for what could be a phenomenal year for you on the field?
Yeah. You know, I'm so grateful to be able to play the game and get the opportunity to show what I can do as a player. And I got that opportunity last year. And like I say all the time, I'm forever indebted to Coach Freed for that opportunity. This year, the biggest thing for me is honing in on my leadership skills. And then on top of that, you know, being more of a cerebral player. not just relying on athleticism and natural ability, but understanding the ins and outs of the game. If I can anticipate what's going to happen before, a 4-4 player can play at even faster speed. So just thinking about the game within the game, being able to play that pre-snap game within my head, every single play, just being locked in my keys and understand what's going to happen. I think it can make my game even more dynamic. From a physical standpoint, just trying to be more violent on tackles and, cause disruption, trying to get the ball out in any situations, whether that's on the ball carrier, on the running back, or rushing the quarterback, just trying to give our offense more opportunities. These are certainly things I honed in on the defensive side, and I'm excited to show the fans what I can do.
It's no secret to those that listen to me on a daily basis here on ESPN that the linebacker position in football is my absolute favorite on the defensive side. And I've got to be honest with you, man, this is one of the deepest linebacker rooms I've seen at Auburn in quite some time, because in the past there's been so much fear of, okay, the first couple guys are really good, but if they get hurt, you just don't know what's behind them. But, and not wishing, of course, injury, anything like that, but there's just so many of you guys that are going to be able to rotate this year, which should make you fresher down the stretch. I mean, enlighten us a little bit on what you've seen from your room in this offseason going into 2024.
Yeah, I see a room that's extremely hungry to go out there and compete. I see guys that are ready to be leaders and command a defense. We got different guys working at different positions, just commanding the defense and being vocal leaders out there. Quite frankly, I'm excited. We talk about being able to be fresh and have guys that can roll in and out, it's going to certainly help improve my game in all facets. And, I'm so excited. We have Austin Keys returning, who played a lot of football last year, will transfer from Ole Miss, and certainly somebody that's a dynamic Mike linebacker, can run sideline to sideline and communicate and get the defense aligned. We have Dorian Maiusi, who's a transfer from Duke. Certainly somebody that has great leadership skills, extremely smart player, really wants to, continue to learn and grow under Coach Durkin and everything he's teaching us. Robert Woodyard is has been in the program for a while. Mm-hmm. He's been here for 3 years, and he's going to be a strong contributor this year. He's been playing both linebacker positions, those both positions in and out. And certainly been somebody that, has been doing everything that he can to show Coach Durkin that he is somebody that can contribute for us. And he's been done a good job. He's extremely violent, a downhill player. And I'm excited for the fans to see what Robert Whittier is going to do this year, because he will be contributing in a big way. And then we have a transfer, Fanage Gote, who transferred in from Maryland, who's certainly somebody that's a leader. He goes out there and is a downhill linebacker as well. He's very physical in the run game and does a good job in terms of communicating with the back end. And, the young guys are certainly guys that are going to be out there contributing, as well as DeMarcus Riddick can certainly fly at the linebacker position. He's certainly a sideline-to-sideline backer. And Debo, DJ Barber, is certainly somebody who's going to be contributing. So it's so great to have all these guys being able to be focal points of the defense. And I'm excited to see how it all blends in the first game.
Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante joining us on ESPN 106.7 for our weekly Tiger Takes, the debut here in 2024. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. You and I had a chance to sit down and talk for a few minutes at SEC Media Days in Dallas back in July, and we talked about DJ Durkin, and he's been such a big conversation piece for everybody we've had a chance to talk with on that defensive side of the football. What is it that makes him so different in what I've heard is exciting to play for, Eugene?
Yeah, I think Coach Durkin's just his directive, the way he commands a room, just trying to get us to, be the best players that we can be. Every single day I wake up and I know I'll be challenged, and I've given him that right. I've asked to be coached hard, and I've asked to, which if I say I want to be the best player I want to be, I need you to draw that out of me. And that comes with tough conversations at times, One thing he's been harping to me on is my pre-snap, just pre-snap alignment, pre-snap process. And every single day I'm trying to hone in on it. I remember just having him in my head and be like, Gene, you got to work on this. You got to continue to improve. So Just having him challenge our room, challenge the whole defense has been a great thing. He does it with love. He coaches us the right way. He brings his son around practice, and it's just been a great environment to be around Coach Durkin. He brings energy, juice every single day. And as a player, I can truly admire that. So I'm going to continue to go hard for him and go out and lay it on the line Saturday.
Yeah, game week coming up. It is game one, Alabama A&M. It'll be a night game under the lights at Jordan-Hare. And look, there's no doubting it's going to be packed out for game one. Jordan-Hare will be rocking, even if it is a, you know, game one non-conference game. I know you guys look at it as just another game, get through, get the victory, and all those sorts of things. But what is it going to be like for you and even some of the new guys to get back into the stadium and get this season going?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing just to be able to get the season going. You know, getting acclimated to playing in front of the fans, getting acclimated to being out there. Jordan-Hare Stadium is certainly an electric environment that the fan base is extremely rich over here. And, you know, we're just excited to be back out there and, you know, go out there and show the fans what we believe, that the team that we believe we can be, which is a successful team in this SEC conference. And, you know, playing each game independent of the one before and after, a 12-week schedule, which is a hard, gruesome schedule, but taking every single game as an opportunity to show what we can be. You know, I feel like that biggest thing this year is just putting it all on tape, laying it on the line, you know, not having what ifs or what could have been, you know, just laying on the line and trying to get the wins every single week.
Well, you look at this schedule, there is Cal back on the schedule, of course, went out there last year, they get to come to the Plains this year. You've got five straight home games to start the season, tough road trips to Georgia, to Kentucky, to Missouri. I mean, that month of October, you guys don't play a single home game, man. I know that's got to be difficult. And then the back end of the schedule with, you know, a couple of SEC games at home and then on the road for the Iron Bowl. I mean, it may be easier than what it's been in the past, but Eugene, there's no off weeks in the SEC.
Oh, no, we certainly understand that. It's extremely competitive being in the SEC and just playing our schedule. We understand that we can't underestimate any opponent in any facet. We have to go out there and play our game, not play down to the level of competition and just go out there and lay it on the line. You know, we have to, you know, play with pride, play with all those things that, you know, the alumni and different people from different eras of this university played with, you know, just going out there and trying to make everybody proud in how we prepare and how we play.
Eugene Asante joining us here on ESPN 106.7. One more before we let you get out of here. As the season gets going this weekend, Auburn and Alabama A&M to open up the 2024 season. Eugene, what can they expect to see from you, this defense, and this Auburn football team this year?
What they can expect to see from me is a player that is truly focused on being the best player he could possibly be. But just honing in on the little details of it within my game and just, you know, going out there and playing with relentless effort. That has kind of been my staple point. People often reference that in terms of my game. And I always want to let that be known every single game, regardless of what game, what situation we're in, I'm going to play all out every single play. From this team, I think I want people to understand that we understand all the trials and tribulations that we went through last year. Quite frankly, we don't put those trials and tribulations on the back burner. We use that as fuel, that pain, that everything that we endured, we use that as fuel to the fire. And we're quite frankly, we're pissed off for greatness. So every single Saturday, we're going to go out there and try to lay it on the line for our fan base. We understand all the things that transpired last year, and we're going to make everybody proud in the way we prepare and the way we play. And just to enjoy the ride. You know, college football is such a great thing, a great experience. Playing for the pride and the heritage of a school, and we don't forget that being here at Auburn, which is we talk about the Auburn family being such a loving and caring fan base. So we don't take that for granted, and we're going to try to make them proud in all our endeavors.
If that doesn't get you fired up for Auburn football this weekend, I don't know what will. Eugene Asante, Auburn linebacker, he'll be with us every single week here on ESPN for Tiger Takes, brought to you by 12K Salon.
Join us on ESPN 106.7 each Thursday at 5:30 for Tiger Takes, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Call to book your next appointment, 334-209-209. 2900. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Hugh Freeze. If you want the latest on Auburn football and the SEC,